Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters. This is episode 408 on the 6th of June, 2022. And I'm your host, Harry, joined today by Carl.
Hello.
And we're going to be going through a few subjects today, including why everybody hates Boris and whether anybody's going to vote in confidence with him. Also, is this the world that you really wanted? And finally, some more depressing detransition stories, because the premium podcast we did on them before wasn't enough, apparently.
No.
Before we go in any further into it, though, we do have one big announcement to make. Would you like to talk about this?
Yeah, we're looking to hire at least one, but possibly two new video content presenters. So if you think you would be interested in the job, you can email us at careers@lotuseaters.com. One proviso, of course, is that you have to work from the office. So you'll need to be able to work on location in Swindon. But other than that, we'd like to hear from you. So give us an email.
All right. So, yep, if you're interested, contact us. Now let's get into the news. So everybody hates Boris. For our regular viewers, this will be unsurprising news. And for anybody else who's even got just a bit of an ear to the ground on the in England, probably not that surprising either, because it seems that the Tories have initiated a vote of confidence to be going on later today between 6 and 8, which will determine whether Boris Johnson will remain the leader of the Conservative Party, which is going to be very interesting. Before we go any further, though, I'd like to draw your attention to a video that Carl did last month called Boris Was Elected as a Radical, which is basically just a reminder of how far Boris has fallen from what he was initially elected for. Would you like to talk a bit about it?
Yeah, it's tragic, isn't it? Like, as Boris was elected on the wave of Brexit, get Brexit done. This is going to be fixed. And in this video, I just explained that, look, Brexit wasn't just about the sort of legalese of being in the European Union. Brexit was a concern about the lack of Britishness in our political system and a restoration of to something we've lost. And now Boris is just so far down the rabbit hole of being like Tony Blair 3.0 that it's just embarrassing. It's no wonder everyone hates him, because he's incapable of satisfying the left. And he seems to not understand that there is a right wing who wants to be spoken to. And so it's just tragic, frankly.
Yeah, we've got a choice between two progressive parties, and he has just failed to live up to every expectation. When you talk about the fact that, you know, it wasn't, because the left likes to look at Brexit purely economically.
And
that's not what most people were voting on. They were voting on culture. And Boris has just continually let that culture slip away from us. And I just want to point out as well, it's the reason why DeSantis is popular in Florida, because he actually faces against the progressive agenda and pushes against it, which is something that Boris has continually refused to do. He's a coward. He's spineless.
He doesn't just push against it. He actively legislates against it. Mm. He actually takes steps. I mean, Boris has got he probably still has like 380 majority in Parliament. So he could have done anything. He could have just done anything. He could have done whatever he wanted. He could have gone through it and gone, no. All of this is Blairite nonsense. We're getting rid of it. But he hasn't done anything like that.
Yes, and it's led to where we are now. So let's get into the news itself. So if we go to the first link that we've got here from GB News, the Boris Johnson no confidence vote has been confirmed by Sir Graham Brady, who I think is the head of the 1922 Commission, and the ballot will be taken between 6 and 8 tonight. Let's just take a look at this. So Johnson is facing a vote of no confidence by Tory MPs amid anger across the party at the disclosures over lockdown parties in Downing Street. Now, if this is why he eventually ends up getting voted out of the leadership position of the Tories, it's a pretty pathetic reason. John loves to point out something, which is that the whole discourse going on around the parties is stupid, because the discourse is like, oh, he shouldn't have broken lockdown rules, when it's like they broke lockdown rules because everybody knew they were stupid in the first place.
Yeah.
He should apologize for the lockdown rules being implemented, say this will never happen again. I think you mentioned in the video, give compensation to all the people who were arrested or persecuted as a result of them, and then move on with an actual conservative agenda. But he refuses to, because he's pathetic at this point, let's be perfectly honest.
No, you're absolutely right. It's completely disgraceful. This is something that he did in the first place. And he knew it was wrong. He knew it was wrong at the time, and he did it anyway. And now he's paying the price for it. So,
yeah, so you get what you deserve, it seems.
Yeah, I'm not terribly sympathetic.
Me neither. Sir Graham Brady, chairman of the Backbench 1922 Committee, confirmed in a statement that he has received the 54 letters from Conservative MPs needed to trigger a vote. And that's at least 54 MPs, meaning at least, I think it was 15% of the Conservative MPs who are active are actively against Boris, which is not that much of a surprise, but the reasons why differ from person to person, and we'll get into that. The vote by secret ballot will take place in Westminster later on today. It comes after a steady stream of Tory MPs called publicly for the Prime Minister to stand down in the wake of Sue Gray's report into breaches of COVID regulations at Number 10 and in Whitehall.
Just before we move on from that, right?
Oh, yeah.
What percentage of the British public do you think really care about that?
I think if you were to poll them, it would be very different from their actual feelings. Because I think a lot of people are more than happy to use it. Like, I'm happy to use it as a beating stick to keep him under control and stop him from implementing more illiberal anti-British policies in the future. But in reality, I don't actually
Nobody's
care.
Talking about it on the street.
No, I don't
like,
care.
Nobody talks about it. You can go to the pub, go to a cafe, whatever. No one's sat there discussing Partygate in there. This is very much a Westminster pathology that the media know they've got him on something. And they're like, you know, like a Rottweiler, they're not going to let go. And it's like, well, you're just going to get eaten up by these people because you're doing nothing positive. You know, you're essentially relying on getting away from scandals to just exist. And it's like, that's not how you should be governing. You should be like forcefully going forward, this, and this. So like, okay, they can talk about Partygate, but you're going to, you know, revolutionize that or change this or whatever. But they're not doing anything like that.
Well, I mean, the thing is, even if they get rid of him, who is going to replace him? Who is going to implement those sorts of policies that you're talking about? Who is going to be the one pushing forward and legislating against progressive policies? Because I don't see any of them. I don't see any of them doing that. In order to oust the Prime Minister, the rebels will need 180 MPs. Allies of Mr. Johnson made clear he's determined to fight and stay on, which is just the fact that this happened in the first place is ridiculous. When I think he had the largest majority since Thatcher. And it's just led to this. It's pathetic.
Yep.
A number 10 spokeswoman said tonight is a chance to end months of speculation and allow the government to draw a line and move on, delivering on the people's priorities. The PM welcomes the opportunity to make his case to MPs and will remind them that when they're united and focused on the issues that matter to voters, there is no more formidable political force, except they don't ever focus on the issues that matter
talk.
To voters.
It's just talk. Like, we found out that last year they let in 50% more people than in 2020.
And this is after Brexit has gone through.
After Brexit. So in 2020, during the lockdown, 700,000 people were allowed to come and live here. It's like, okay, that seems like a lot. And they're like, okay, but what about 1.16 million? It's like, well, that seems ridiculous. Why are you doing this to us?
Well, Brexit at this point just seems to be ceremonial. It's just like, it's purely aesthetic. We say that we've gone through Brexit, but we'll just keep doing everything that was going on before it.
It's madness.
At greater rates.
This is the thing that the Lord Ashcroft poll showed, that for the Brexiteers, the second most important thing other than sovereignty was immigration. And the Conservatives are like, oh, you like immigration, do you? It's like, no.
No, Boris, no. You've taken this the wrong way. Please, put the spritz down. Liz Truss tweeted, "The Prime Minister has my 100% backing in today's vote, and I strongly encourage colleagues to support him." Of course, Truss is going with this. "He has delivered on COVID recovery and supporting Ukraine in the face of Russian aggression." And there it is. There it is right there. Who on the street, other than those who are putting the Ukrainian flag in their Twitter bio so everybody knows what a good person they are, really cares about some conflict that is going on like halfway across the continent?
No one.
They care about the fact that you're taxing them into bankruptcy.
Yeah. The price of food's going up. Yeah, literally, you've raised taxes when you said you weren't going to raise taxes. The NHS is consuming more and more and more of the national budget. And you're like, yeah, but Ukraine is like, I don't care.
We're pushing the green agenda that the Green Party wants as well, just not at the same rate that the Green Party would prefer. We're pushing Labour policies just a few weeks slower than they want. So what is conservative about this party at this point, honestly? And she goes on to say, "He has apologised for mistakes made. We must now focus on economic growth." Why? The average person on the street does not care about economic growth. They care about being able to afford food.
And moreover, like, as if the media is just been like, oh, well, now you've said that, then I guess we'll let it go.
Oh, yeah. You know, hands in the air. Well,
the Labour-supporting media is doing everything they can to destroy the Conservative Party. And the Conservatives are so goddamn stupid, they're going to let it happen.
Yeah. And the Tories who are against Boris also made a list of 13 reasons why. It was that smile, that damn smile is where it all started.
Oh, yeah.
And I've got the link here. So the list brands Mr. Johnson as a conservative Corbyn.
Yes.
Yeah, it's true.
That's totally true. Conservative Corbyn. That's exactly what he is.
And that's big C conservative, because I don't see much conservative about him nowadays. Yeah. And concludes that the only way to restore conservative fortunes to a point where we can win the next general election is to remove Boris Johnson as Prime Minister. That might be the case, maybe. But it's all dependent on who you replace him with, yeah. And I don't see any real contenders.
Do something conservative, and maybe people might like you.
No, we can't have that, because the newspapers won't like us.
That's true.
There you go.
That's a good point.
The document seen by the Times...
The Daily Mirror will be furious.
What will the Express say?
The Express would be on their side. Yeah. The Express is conservative. Oh, like, you know, the Guardian would just be like, oh my God, flurries of op-eds.
Mm. But the document states that the Prime Minister's reception at the service of Thanksgiving tells us nothing that data does not, citing polling that no social group trusts him, with even 55% of current Conservatives calling him untrustworthy. You know, fair play. And one of the 13 reasons to remove the Prime Minister detailed in the document outlines how the booing which the Conservative leader and his wife received outside St. Paul's Cathedral speaks volumes about the public's confidence in his leadership, which, yeah.
You did this to yourself.
Pretty much, yep. He started out popular. People liked him back in the day, but not anymore.
I liked him.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to do something.
I thought he was goofy. I thought he was a bit of a clown, but I didn't see any reason to hate him.
Yeah, exactly. And he was... He was saying the right things. Oh, we're going to do this, do that, do the other. It's like, okay, well, go on then. And you've done nothing.
Yep. And, John just pointing out the Daily Express was bought by the Mirror, so they're posting Fringe now. That's why I might have been a bit confused there.
Oh, sorry, I did not know that.
Because I've not seen the Express posting anything based, I'll say that for sure.
Not a big Daily Express reader, I have to admit.
That's
so
fair.
I didn't know that. Fair enough.
And just a reminder that this is not the first rebellion that Boris's government has had. And let's be honest, this is not the first rebellion that the Conservatives have had against themselves for the past 10 years. It's just a consistent cycle. It keeps happening again and again and again. First against Cameron, then against May, and now against Johnson for the second time. Mm. It just keeps happening. Nobody has faith in the Conservatives anymore because they're just infighting as much as Labour do.
But what kind of rebellion is it? Is it Conservatives objecting to the progressiveness of the ruling people in the party? Or
it seems to vary from person to person, but there are plenty of people who are basically like, we're not going far enough.
Oh, brilliant.
And we'll see that because, once again, the actual members of the party are not particularly conservative either. They're just not as lefty as Labour are. A record number of conservative lawmakers voted against one of Prime Minister Boris Johnson's key measures to quell the COVID outbreak. And this is from December of last year. Policy of vaccine certification to enter nightclubs and places with large crowds. And could you think of anything more un-English and more un-British than papers, please?
No.
That's the country we are now. And it's happened under the stewardship of a Conservative government. Well, ostensibly Conservative government. And this is what caused 100 Conservatives to vote against Johnson. And another reminder here as well, if we go to the next link, that it was actually Labour's votes, Labour's support of Boris Johnson ensured that these COVID measures passed. Goes to show just how conservative this government actually is, or at least certainly its upper echelon of leaders are. And to be fair, Labour, despite the fact that they seem to be aligned with most of Boris Johnson's goals, are absolutely loving this. You've got people like Dawn Butler posting, finally, 54 Conservative MPs, they're putting forward no confidence. We only need 180, here we go. And then she points out, the 1922 committee's rule that Boris will be safe for 12 months, and that's if he gets a vote of confidence, if you don't get the 180s, can easily be changed because they make the rules.
Well, I guess it can, but what's the point in having rules if you're just going to change them at a whim?
I mean, that's just the point of Labour at this point, isn't it? Things aren't how we want because the rules are in place that say we can't. Let's just change everything, upend the whole order.
But why would any of the Conservatives not be looking at this and be like, right, okay, so actually our mortal enemies in the Labour Party, who literally could not bring themselves to agree with something a Conservative did, even if it was something they themselves have suggested, such as things like lockdowns, they're all crowing about this. It's like, okay, well, why don't we do the opposite? So they're screeching. Why don't we want them howling in pain? Why don't we want them saying, oh, we hate everything the Conservatives are doing?
I don't know. And to answer your question of where the opposition is coming from within the Conservative Party, if we go to the next one, Jesse Norman, who says he supported Boris Johnson for 15 years for the London mayoralty and for the Prime Minister, has withdrawn his support and will be voting against him later on. He's got these letters here which explain why. And I've not written down the exact wording, but his reasons that he lists in the letter are as a counterproductive and probably illegal Rwanda policy.
You mean the really popular Rwanda policy?
Yeah, the massively public actually popular liked. One.
The one thing the Conservatives have done that people liked. Right, okay.
Yep, the privatisation
of doubtful legality.
Yeah.
What does it mean?
It means that if people want to come to the country, they have to be able to, or it's illegal to just say, no, we don't want you here.
No, what he means is like, oh, we're going to employ Tony Blair's Human Rights Act. And it's like, yeah, the thing that the Conservatives should have repealed.
Yes.
Like, it's unbelievable.
I just hate the idea that, you know, your borders, because in a sense, the government, as it stands in a democratic system, are the stewards of a territorial area. They have certain property rights over it. Your property...
Well, I wouldn't necessarily frame it like that, but they have an obligation to defend the integrity of the country.
But it's like, if it was like a king or something that saw it as their property, you have boundaries to that, and it's like, you're only supposed to be allowed in if people want you in, whereas this government is just like, come one, come all. Who cares?
Well, they just don't seem to care, yeah.
Yeah. They also point out the privatisation of Channel 4, because public ownership of businesses is apparently a big Conservative talking point. And also, just the government generally lacking a plan. Presumably, this man would like some kind of 4 to 5 year plan to be pushed forward. Because this
so he sounds like a commie. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing is that this.
Where's your 5 year plan, says Comrade Jesse?
This is the current state of the Conservative Party. The only complaints they really have against Boris is, why aren't you progressive enough?
Yeah.
Why aren't you more progressive?
Like, that is literally the complaint here. It's like, oh, you're doing unprogressive things, Boris. It's like, well, barely. And so.
So what? We're Conservatives. We're not supposed to be progressives.
Yeah, we're not supposed to be doing progressive things. Yeah.
And you've got people like Calvin pointing out the obvious that I've already stated, which is just the sad fact of the matter if we go to the next one, which is just that if not him, then who?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem that we've got with the current Conservatives. And the Politics UK, just Jeremy Hunt, hashtag never Hunt. What choices do we have?
I mean, I suppose Liz Truss is probably like... You know,
she'd probably
be
next in
line. She's terrible as well.
Yeah, all of them, Preeti Patel, Liz Truss, Rishi Sunak, they're all bark, no bite. They will go through the motions of telling you what you want to hear and then never follow through with it.
Kemi Badenoch, but yeah, there's no chance of that.
There's no chance that'll happen. Yeah. No, and if we go to the next one as well, LBC had Keir Starmer on to talk about this. And just listen to the points that he makes. Just listen to the points that he makes and tell me... Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, before we go on, if leader of the opposition says, I think you should get rid of this man who I oppose. Oh, big, big surprise, Keir.
Surprise. Big shot. But tell me if the talking points are any different whatsoever from the Conservative talking points that are being put forward. Have you played it, John?
I think the mood has changed. I think the public have made their mind up about this man. They don't think he's really telling the truth about many, many things, not just Partygate, but just the general sense that this man doesn't really tell the truth, can't be trusted. But also, of course, we've got a cost of living crisis, and they're saying, where's the plan? Where's the government we need to lead? And the answer to that is, we've got a government that's divided. We've got a prime minister trying to cling on to his job. I think most people would say, your job is to help me through the cost of living crisis, and you're not doing it because you're distracted.
I mean, that just sounds like some of the talking points that the Conservatives are putting forward. And I would say, as somebody who, despite becoming more and more disillusioned with the idea of a state in the first place, if I'm completely honest, recognises in the English tradition, the job of the government is not necessarily to make sure that you have money in your pocket. It's to uphold law and order, to maintain cultural stability, and to generally provide... a rule of law and court systems and all that sort of stuff. It is not to go and throw money at the population and say, here you go, everything's going to be okay now.
Yeah, but the Labour Prime Minister in waiting certainly thinks that's the case.
Yeah, but they're not English, really, are they? No, at least not in terms of their spirit.
No, it's very continental, but like, it's just so empty when the leader of the opposition is like, well, I think the Prime Minister should resign. Well, yeah, duh, you want that job. You know, of course you think that. But it means nothing. It's totally hollow. And on what grounds? Well, he's not governing as a socialist. Well, no. Well, he is, but like,
he's not fast enough.
Yeah, not socialist enough. And it's like, oh well, what a shock.
Yeah, you've got other members.
This country is an absolute state.
I know, it's a complete mess. And you've got other members of the cabinet alongside Liz Truss, like Rishi Sunak, saying, I support everything because the vaccine rollout to our response to Russian aggression, all things that the general public didn't really want. They wouldn't have wanted the vaccine rollout, to be honest, if it weren't for the fact you were locking them down in the first place and then promising vaccines will allow you to not be locked down anymore.
Well, even then, if they were like, look, we're just going to make vaccines publicly available on the NHS. Right?
Okay.
Exactly. You'd have been like, right, so I can go to the hospital, get a vaccine if I feel like getting a vaccine. They'd be like, yep, that's the COVID policy done. Then everyone would be like, okay, well, that's fine. And no one would have cared. And everyone's got on their lives.
But no, if you don't get it, then you'll be ostracized from society. And look, we've had to team up with the enemy to get these positions put forward. And then he's just going like, I'm backing him today. We'll continue to back him as we focus on growing the economy. Once again, nobody cares really about growing the economy, at least not in the way that Rishi Sunak and those types.
You sure don't want to just print some more free money, Rishi? That'll grow the economy.
Yeah, that'll help. And clearing COVID backlogs. COVID backlogs due to policies that your government enacted in the first place. And let's just remind ourselves of Rishi's plans to tackle the cost of living, mentioning printing money. Just print money. Just print money and give it to people. I know that we're still destroying your bank account with taxes and levies and all this sort of stuff, but here's an extra 550 quid. Just don't worry about the inflation.
It just doesn't, it's like they just don't understand or don't care.
Yeah. And if you actually wanted, if you wanted a policy position to be able to tackle the cost of living and maybe increase some popularity with the Conservative government from Conservative voters, I do have a suggestion, which is something that's been pointed out a number of times. Remove some of the energy taxes. Let's just go to the next one just to finish this off here. Just a reminder, if we scroll down to the graph that they've got here, this is something that's common across the UK right now. Yeah. This graph breaking down your electricity bill, the thing that is destroying so many people.
Look
right
at that
now.
Big orange quarter of your bill.
Government obligation costs. I didn't sign up for this.
Environmental and social. Oh, progressive taxes for redistributive policies based on environmental and social concerns in your energy bill.
Because Boris cares more about what the freaks and death cultists and Extinction Rebellion have to say than his own voting constituency. It's absolutely ridiculous. Even if Boris wins this vote, if he loses, it doesn't really matter because the Conservative Party, as it stands, is not fit for purpose in the slightest because these are the kinds of policies that they're pushing no matter what. And actual confidence in Boris was shattered a very long time ago.
I mean, just as a quick thing on this, you could knock off VAT and the government obligation costs.
Oh, please.
And you'd have about a third of everyone's bills going down overnight.
Yes. Yeah,
so, like, that's literally about a third of the bill.
If you want to talk about growing the economy, people having more money in their pocket to invest, start their own businesses and patronise other people's businesses, that's how you do it. Because I don't trust the government to spend my money as well as I want to spend my money.
Well, unsurprisingly, and moreover, it's my bloody money. It's not theirs. You know, but it's just shocking how they can knock off a third of everyone's energy bills. And if they did that tomorrow, everyone would be thrilled.
Like
that,
I'd be thrilled.
Yeah, anyway.
Anyway.
I'm not going to go off on one because it's just really, really frustrating.
It's annoying, isn't it?
Just it's so weird how the Conservatives have like got these like silken handcuffs on. And it's like, yeah, but there's actually nothing stopping you from breaking them. Like, you're in charge. You're the government. You've got an overwhelming majority. You could have just done these things and nobody, all that would have happened is the Guardian Easters would have whined.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's entertaining when they whine.
You want them to whine because they're your enemies. Anyway. So I guess it's time to talk about whether this is really the world that we wanted or what the progressives wanted, because I'm kind of sick of the term equality and I'm not in favour of it. I'm just not in favour of whatever it is they mean by equality or inclusivity or any of these other progressive buzzwords where it's like, oh, we need to have everyone included in all things at all times in exactly the same way. It's like, no, I'm totally against this. This is absolutely inhuman. And it just goes against any concept of freedom that I think is valuable or meaningful. But before we start, go to lowcities.com, sign up, because that's how you can support us. That's the way we pay for everything. But also to get access to amazing bits of content like this, right? This was an article, a deep thing written by Connor Tomlinson called Englishman for Exclusivity Against Equality. Now this, it's got an audio track for silver members, so you don't have to read the whole thing yourself if you don't want to. But honestly, go and take a listen to this. It is important that we have inequality and exclusivity. All good things are derived from those principles. And if we don't have those things, then what we have is the lowest common denominator for everybody. This is why Soviet housing was terrible. And this is why the housing that was built in like some, you know, the early 20th century isn't terrible. You know, this is why like the world in our side of the world, in the capitalist world, is good and the communist world sucks. But anyway, and it does.
No, I agree completely. Inequality is just a fact. It's just a fact of reality. Nobody, Thomas Sowell points out, nobody's equal to themselves on different days.
Exactly.
And the attempt to try and create equality, whatever nebulous definition that you have for that, because it can be different in everybody's head what it actually means, will only lead to social engineering. And when the social engineering doesn't work, they'll go, oh, it's because of this, and they'll just keep social engineering us into oblivion.
Moreover, some social engineering is downright immoral.
Absolutely.
And let's take the example of, say, Pride Month. Right? I don't like what Pride Month is doing in a lot of ways. Now, I don't care about gay people at all, actually. I spend 0% of my day thinking about gay people. But then every corporation ever is like, boom, you need to talk about gay people today. It's like, oh, do I? Do I actually? Like, I don't think I actually do, but now I have to. So it's like, right, okay, what are we talking about? Oh, we're talking about drag queen events for children. Well, I guess that's inclusive, isn't it? You know, that's one of those things. So, well, you know, you would have a person read a book to children, yeah, but why not have a man in drag read a book about penises to children? Like, why? That's inclusive. It's like, yeah, it's also immoral, isn't it? It's also gross.
You can't convince me they don't get off on it.
Yeah.
You absolutely can't.
I refuse to believe this isn't a fetish.
Yeah, the whole thing, I mean, it's obviously over-sexualizing of the female form done by men pretending to be, dressing like women. And you can't convince me that the men dressing like women, they're not getting off on it. Obviously they are.
But also, who is this for? Is this for the children? Or is it for, if you can scroll down so we can see the picture, right? Is this for the children or is it for the person wearing the wig and the makeup and the dress? So they can feel special.
Generally speaking, I don't think kids care who reads the stories to
them.
The
children aren't like, Daddy, I really want to watch a man in a dress with ridiculous makeup read me stories about a gender-confused unicorn. Like, no child has ever made a demand like that, right? It's all about the adults trying to do it for themselves and taking advantage of the kids.
You mean your kids have never come up and asked that question? Shocking. No, shocking.
They've burst into tears seeing stuff like this, but they've never asked for it. Anyway, let's go to the next one. So, talk about Pizza Hut's drag queens, shall we? So, why? Right?
Posobiec's more and more right by the day. Look at how far we've fallen.
Yeah, exactly. You know, return to tradition. But so this is Pizza Hut, which is facing criticism after recommending a book about a child drag queen in its reading program for children. Why are you doing this? Is this the future that was promised, is it? Oh, we're going to have such a progressive and impressive future. It's like, really? Child drag queens in Pizza Hut.
Just to point out again, there's no way you can convince me drag queens aren't getting off on it. So therefore, what is the purpose of putting a child in a drag outfit?
That's a great question. I don't have an answer for, unfortunately. But anyway, this was something that was, needless to say, got a bit of a backlash from, you know, parents who are like, this seems a bit weird and adult. Anyway, let's keep going, right? This is drag queen story time at just some, you know, small town library. Right, but look at the way that this is being framed, right? It helps kids explore diversity and different personalities. So as if kids aren't confused enough just by being kids and not really understanding the world around them, right? But they say a big part of what the library is encouraging is diversity and inclusion and supporting that in an open way. The cool thing about drag is that it's a way for young people to see how they can explore and try on different personalities. So look, I think they might have enough problems working out who they personally are rather than trying to, I'll be five or six different people, right? Drag provides an opportunity for all ages to reconsider the masks we are all forced to wear daily. Really? Even like a six-year-old's like, Daddy, I really need to reconsider the mask I'm forced to wear daily. Kids don't have a mask. They live like authentic first-person selves. There's no second-hand sort of second-order self-criticism in a child's mind. They're just like, right, I'm going to be an Indian today. You know, I'm going to be a soldier
today.
They're
ridiculously earnest.
Like, exactly. Exactly. Everything they do is in earnest, right? They don't think this way, and this is for the adults around them doing it to them.
And this also just sounds like some kind of weird derivation of the early 2000s, like edgy, oh, we're all wearing masks every day, man.
Oh, yeah, it's pathetic. But I love this direct quote. Kids learn through play, so it's a good opportunity to meet them on that level. So, yeah, but I don't want you educating my children or any children, frankly. I don't think you're educating them in their own interest, right? And this is most exemplified. And again, is this the world you wanted? In the Drag Kids to Pride event. Isn't that just a lovely, lovely,
that
child-friendly
name.
Drag show name?
That name gives away intentions a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's called Drag Kids to Pride, right? If you scroll down, you should see some pictures in this. Go down. There's pictures in it of... there we go, right? Child-friendly drag show at a gay bar in Dallas, Texas, with the signs on the walls, "It's not going to lick itself, and I licked it, so it's mine." That's child-friendly.
Yeah, I mean... So you're literally just telling kids, if it's yours, lick it.
Also, I mean, "It's not going to lick itself" is an open invitation to a sexual act. This is not child friendly, in my opinion. As a father, this is disgusting. And I mean, it's for adults only. That's just the only way I could possibly describe it without becoming incredibly conservative about it.
The thing is, it's like 20 years ago, it's adults only. Obviously, nobody would have had any contentions with that statement. And now we're in this. This is how far it's come.
Yeah, it's disgusting. But, you know, Texas, the Republican state, is doing this. Don't know why that's allowed. But so there are a bunch of videos of this going around, which are just disgusting.
Horrifying.
Yeah. Kids giving drag queens money in a gay bar in front of a sign saying it's not going to lick itself. I mean, why? Did the kids ask for this? Because normally, I mean, look how young these kids are, like 6, 7.
This is not appropriate.
Normally, they want to, like, you know, play, like, Roblox or something. That, again, is this about the kids or is this about the drag people doing it? And anyway, so this, there have been a bunch of clips, and I just thought we'd have a look at the kind of way that the... So there's a conservative comedian called Alex Stein, and he goes up and just starts confronting them outside, going, "Look, do you think this is appropriate for kids? This is quite disgusting." And it's very interesting where their minds are. Listen to the criticisms and insults they level at him. Let's play it.
"You should be ashamed of yourself. You're a little kid out of a gay bar.
You should be ashamed of yourself and your little children.
You're ashamed of yourself. You guys are letting little kids."
But you leave the kid alone.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, this is the whole thing that... the AA has pointed out with the Freudian subversion, where now if you've got any criticism of any outlandish lifestyle, you can just say, "Oh, you're sexually repressed. You only disagree with this because you're gay, but you just can't accept it."
But the notice how this is, in their minds, seems to be only framed in terms of sexualization.
That's the only way these people are thinking.
They're at
things.
A gay bar. They're doing drag performances in front of a sexually suggestive sign, and when confronted on it, "You watch gay porn." So, well, let's say he did. That still doesn't make it appropriate for children.
No, absolutely not.
But it's the only way that they can attack him is on the merits of being a sexual being, which 6-year-old children aren't and shouldn't be treated as. Again, shouldn't have to say that, but this is the world that they've created. But let's watch the next one, because again, he addresses a couple more, and they just can't get away fast enough. It's just like...
"Little children, do you like dancing for little children? You don't think that's disgusting? Dancing around for little children? Don't you think that's disgusting?
You don't think that's
disgusting? Get the fuck away.
Hey, well, you can't just touch me. You don't think that's disgusting?
You just touch me.
You don't think that's disgusting?
Go on.
You don't think that's disgusting? Dancing for little children. You should be ashamed of yourself dancing for little children. You should be ashamed of yourself.
Child? No.
You guys dance at little children. You should be ashamed of yourselves. You're disgusting. Think about what you just did. Okay, that's fine, but you dance naked in front of little children.
The reason that they're saying they look like pedophiles is because all of this is entirely sexualized.
I mean, obviously.
Your mum's a whore. Okay, but that's a sexual activity. Like, you can't think of yourselves in any way other than being sexual beings when you're doing these drag shows. That's why the conservatives are like, "Oh my god, this looks like it's a, you know, you're noncing these kids."
Yeah, this looks like grooming
yes.
to me.
And anyway, let's carry on. There are school drag shows, because why aren't there? Why not? Like this Ankeny High School brought drag queens in to perform for the students during school. So are you going to tell me there's nothing sexual about this performance? There's not sexual display? Then why are you wearing that costume? I mean, look at it. Like, sorry, is this... how is this in any way appropriate for children? It's unbelievable. The drag queens also spoke to the students about gender identity and expression. Oh God, I can't wait to hear what this person has to say about gender identity and expression, children. Apparently, one photo shows a student handing cash to the drag queen as well.
I have seen a particular photo going around of a bunch of children putting dollars and other money in the pants of a drag queen.
Yeah.
Completely neutral activity. You didn't do it when you were a kid?
This is just for the children, right? There's more over on this. We can go to the next one. So the students were talked to specifically about gender identity and expression. And they say, specifically to me, I thought much more about drag before I thought about how gender identity was really interwoven with the art form. One of the drag queens told the students, see, it's about them. It's not what's good for the students. It's about them. They're doing this for their own self-gratification.
Well, it's also about the ideology.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it's all tied in. But it's all about the performer and not the people being performed to, because, of course, the people being performed to don't have a choice. What are they going to do, walk out of the school?
Well, that's the thing. If you express, as should be your right, your discomfort and your distaste with this, all of a sudden you're the bigot.
Yeah.
You're the one who's being oppressive. You're the one, despite the fact that you're forced to sit there and endure this against your will.
But that's the thing. They're children. They don't have a choice in this. And it's just terrible. Anyway, they carry on, right? They say, from there, I start to think, who am I? And I start to think, what is gender? And I realize no matter what pronouns you use, you are who you are. I could say tomorrow that I wanted to be something inaudible that can be heard on the clip. And no matter what everyone else says to me, I know that I, on the inside, I am who I am. So how is this helping the children? This seems like public therapy for a deranged person.
Yeah, also on the basis of, oh, no matter what anyone else says to me, I know on the inside I am who I am. Okay, then why do you need to, enforce with authority your desired pronouns?
Yes.
If it's just that you are who you are, then why do you need everybody else to submit to that vision of
exactly.
you?
Exactly. This is a massive cope. Anyway, it's disgusting. But anyway, the school got some angry messages from parents.
What a shock.
Shockingly. About this, and the superintendent of the school was like, well, hang on a second, I didn't sign off on this. This was put on as part of the Gay Straight Alliance Club in their end-of-year meeting. The performers were from the Central Iowa Youth Pride Pageant and did a drag performance. The Gay Straight Alliance Club is an approved club, but the performance wasn't approved, and apparently they're currently under investigation. So, yeah, you're going to investigate and find they did nothing wrong.
I have never heard anything good coming from these Gay Straight Alliance clubs. They just sound like indoctrination centers.
Again, just why do you need it in the school? Just out of interest. Aren't you meant to be teaching children how to read and write? Maybe some science,
because
history,
otherwise,
geography?
How will the gays and straights get along with
each other? Exactly. How was anyone gay before we were publicly indoctrinating them into it in schools? Anyway, moving on, right? So that's just one aspect of the future that is just gross and I hate. The next one is this. And if we can just scroll down and just see this picture. This picture... is just the most emblematic of the total confusion in which we find ourselves as a civilization in the current era. Right? This is amazing. So on the left, we have Emily Bridges and Lily Chant, two biological males who identify as transgender, and they won first and second place slots at the London's Thundercrit cycling event on Thursday. And so they thought they'd have a kiss when they're standing on the first and second podium in the women's event. Next to them is a woman in third place with her child, taking care of her child.
I've never seen a greater image that sums up the patriarchy as feminists envisioned it 30 years ago.
Yeah. Is this what feminism was arguing for, is it? Women to be relegated to third place while two men who
probably
think they're women...
Probably saying they're lesbians.
Claiming to be like, yeah, two male-bodied lesbians have a kiss while the biologically female woman looks after a child in third place. Like, come on, this is clown world.
I do respect that she's obviously making a statement by bringing her daughter up on there with her.
I don't know.
I mean, I that's how it comes across to me. She's like, well, here I am, an actual woman with my actual baby, because these two can't do that.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? This is such an inversion of values as well. It's like... feminism's like, oh, we want women's liberation. It's like, okay, but look what you've done with the men in the meantime. Like, the men have also been set free, and they're busy, like, doing this and relegating women to be something totally ignored. And this is the argument the TERFs are making. It's like, well, look, intersectionality is a men's rights movement. And it's like, well, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you kind of got to look at things from incentives, right? And when you have a society that demonizes masculinity to the extent that it does nowadays and says that men, on the base of it, are just all rapists in waiting.
And they're only worthy when they're acting as women.
Yeah. Maybe some of these men who are a little bit less scrupulous than the rest of us are going to go, I want a bit of that women's liberation as well.
I mean, why? What was stopping them? And the answer is, of course, nothing. And this is not novel at all. UPenn swimmer Leah Thomas won swimming competitions by unprecedented margins while openly laying out ambitions toward the Olympics. Do you remember seeing the photo of her diving next to all the other female athletes? The females are going in like this, and the biological male is going in like this.
Yes.
In the dive.
Like starting off just with a massive advantage.
Yeah.
And obvious, clear as day.
Yeah. And then last year you had Laurel Hubbard, who is named powerlifter, who is named Sportswoman of the Year, because women aren't capable of powerlifting like people who are born male.
Did Laurel beat Zuby's deadlift?
I'll have to check, actually.
I mean,
I don't know. but this is the future we're in. Was this what the Star Trek generation were promising us? Was it? It's like, oh, in the future everything's going to be like Star Trek. It's like, no, it's not. In the future everything's going to be debauched. Everything is going to be dirty, and women are going to be a massively lower tier consideration.
I mean, those people didn't even predict what Star Trek was going to be like in the current year.
No, they didn't. That's a great point, actually.
Because Star Trek now is more like this.
Yeah, it is,
it's awful.
Yeah. Anyway, so moving on, just as a quick thing to end this one up. This is the first woman to lead a military service. It's like, no, but
is it?
I think that is actually a biological woman.
Oh my God, right? Apologies.
It's a terrible angle on the photo. I actually looked into it.
I'm just conditioned to assume if it's a woman in a high-ranking position, it's actually a man. That's just what I'm conditioned now.
But the thing is, I'm actually not sure. I couldn't find anything about Linda Fagan to tell me either way.
Oh no.
And from the picture, it's not the most feminine looking of ladies, right? So if Linda Fagan, if you are biologically female, I'm really sorry that we're not sure. But the thing is, all of this is being put up in the air, and I don't think it's our fault that we can't tell what you are, right? And the thing is, this comes down to the question, okay, you might claim to be a woman as well, but how do you know? Could you please define woman for me? Because if you go to the next one.
You know, I was watching Austin Powers over the weekend. You know that scene where he punches Exposition's mum in the face? He's like, that's a man. He was just ahead of the curve.
Ahead of the curve. Although he was misgendering, which is...
That's true.
I watched Matt Walsh's documentary, What is a Woman, the other day. I really enjoyed it. And I can see why the audience really enjoyed it. And I can see why none of the critics, one review, they don't want to touch it. Exactly. Why? Because they can't answer the question. And they've deliberately undermined the very concept of what it is to be a woman. And so this general liquidization of categories is where we're coming to in the modern era. Is this what you wanted when you were a progressive back in the 1980s and 1990s and early 2000s? Is this where you thought we were going? Because this is where we've ended up. And that's not even to talk about, like, you know, the next one, which is just instructing white kids to check their privileges in kindergartens. I'm not even talking about, like, you know, the disgusting racialization that progressives have brought in as well. You know, not talking about any of that. Just the rest of it. Was that where you thought you were going? Because that's where we are. Anyway, moving on slightly from this subject to another subject, which is awful. Let's read through some detransition horror stories, shall we? These are harrowing.
Carl, right? Have I done something wrong?
Yes.
Is this a punishment?
Yes, it is. These are genuinely harrowing stories. And, you know, we laugh because otherwise you're going to be like, oh, wow, I'm so glad that's not me. Right?
Oh, I mean, even if I do laugh just out of cope, to be perfectly honest,
yeah.
I am ridiculously glad that none of these are me.
It is very much a case of there but for the grace of God go I. And I'm saying that as an atheist. But anyway, before we start, you can go over to lowcities.com and put this in context by listening to our book club on Abigail Schreier's book, Irreversible Damage, where I forced Harry to read this book.
Well, I already had it. I just hadn't got round to reading it. And it was like, I probably
should. But I did insist.
Yeah, yeah. And then you made me look at all the D-trans stories as well.
Yes, because, you know, like, it's...
It's important to know.
It's Clockwork Orange style.
Yeah, as awful as it is, as messed up as it is, you do need to know this stuff because this is what's affecting your children nowadays. So many people are sending their kids off to school not realizing that this is the ideology that they are getting indoctrinated into. And it's only by the good grace of people like Ron DeSantis and accounts like Libs of TikTok and authors like Abigail Schreier, that this has come to light.
Yeah, there is another side to the narrative of what it is to be transgender that you do not hear in the mainstream. And it's very serious. And as Abigail Schreier points out, it's not something you can just turn on or off. It's irreversible. So let's get into it. So as I said, I went to RD Trans, which is a very, honestly, I think it's going to get censored. Because what it is, and it is just people who have transitioned and have gone like, right, this isn't for me, and this is actually something I kind of, in oftentimes, kind of regret, and I just want to share my thoughts, right? So don't go to the subreddit, don't bombard them. This is just, you know, if you're not a trans person who's detransitioning, don't go and, you know, cause them trouble or anything like that, because that's not what I'm trying to do here. I'm actually incredibly sympathetic to a lot of these people because, like, they didn't know what they were doing, and there's no way that they can go back, right? And you can see that ideology is not helping any of this, right? So this is one person. They say, one of the hardest things for me to cope with has been giving up on the man I wanted to be. My idealized appearance has always been male, a guy with long hair and a soul patch, or a guy with messy hair and stubble, or a Jesus lookalike. I just feel jealous of men's appearances and characteristics. I feel jealous that they get to be socially privileged and look how I want to look. Who put it in your mind that men are socially privileged?
Feminists and gender ideologues.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I mean, I don't think it's particularly true. And this is what Megha Verma was talking about the other day. It's like, she doesn't think it's socially true. Like, it's maybe if you're a very attractive person, you would be socially privileged. But that's just universal for very attractive people.
It's even got a name, pretty privilege, which is one of the few privileges I would acknowledge as being probably pretty true for the most part.
Yeah, anyway, let's go on to the next one, right? This is one where people are just saying, look, they were just telling me what I wanted to hear, right? And so they say they identified as transmasculine for 5 years and then stopped testosterone 1 year ago. I told my mum I'm thinking about changing my gender marker back to female, and how many people in my environment still have trouble seeing me as a man and accepting my transition. The same people who are explicitly so supportive to my face about my transition, how they could tell I was doing better and this was the right path for me. How much of a man I was and how masculine I was, to the point of making me, to the point it was even making me uncomfortable. And now it turns out they didn't see me that way at all. I feel as though I've dragged everyone through in a sort of mass delusion that made them act that way. I don't like to think I forced them to do this gender-affirming ass-kissing, but then again, maybe I did. I guess I'm mostly scared that I did. I'm scared I forced everyone to see me a certain way, and now I might detransition, it was all for nothing. I don't want people to tell me what they think I want to hear anymore. I want them to be honest, even if it hurts or offends me. Now, I've taken a couple of clips out of this one because it's a bit longer, but you can see the environment these people are operating in.
This is such a common story that I've seen with so many of these detransition stories, where they will drag their family through it. They will force their family into the position where they feel like they have to affirm you, or else they are some kind of bigot, or else they are some kind of oppressor. Yep. And the thing is, a lot of these parents, they will be Gen Xers, like in your generation, and they were the sorts of people who were raised from a very young age to try and be anti-bullying, anti-racist of a different kind, to generally be polite and good people. And you are forcing this onto them. And by their own standards, they think, okay, I'm going to have to go along with it then because I don't want to be a bad person.
And the Generation X is a generally quite liberal generation. So they're not sat there like, you know, they're not getting out their Bibles and going, well, God says, or anything like that, you know. And you can see how, like, the ideology is dragging people along. And I can't imagine that the social pressure is helping, which is, in fact, exactly what this one's talking about. The trans community is not exactly helping, calling this person an evil protector of children, right? She says, so apparently I am, quote, unironically evil and should sterilize myself to prevent my intellectually deficient genes from passing on to the next generation. Why? Because I don't want children to make permanent decisions based off temporary feelings of dissatisfaction within themselves. So sorry for not wanting more kids to go down the path I did and realize too late that they've made a horrible mistake and have to undo it all. Honestly, I'm sick of this S. As soon as people find out that you're a detransitioner, it's like a black mark against your name. I'm transphobic. I'm a TERF. I created this problem myself. I never had dysphoria to begin with. So it's my fault. None of these people know my story, yet they blame me for it. I knew this would happen. People don't like it when you start to reveal a side either of themselves or their community that sheds a negative light on their beliefs. Too bad. I spent 6 years in the trans community for better or worse, and I'll be damned if I'm going to be excommunicated because people are scared of what I have to say and that's their problem. That's terrible.
That is terrible. That's another thing. These people,
community pressure.
These people get abandoned the moment they say, hold up, I might have made a mistake here. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the things that they got thrown at them a lot of the times is, oh, you must have never had trans dysphoria to begin with, which is not true. Mm. The problem is that the dysphoria in itself is such a nebulous category that can be caused by so many variables. Like it could be issues with your childhood, issues with your parents, issues just generally with hormones and depression, especially given that a lot of this are women, young girls going through what is oftentimes considered to be the hardest time in a young girl's life when they're going through puberty, and it can cause dysphoria. But the problem is that most people don't think, is this the best way to solve my dysphoria? They just go, this is what people have told me, so I best transition. It's like, I think that's why I kind of like was inoculated against a lot of this stuff when it started to happen, and I started to see it for what it was, because I lived through the period, I don't know how it was when you were growing up, where so
None
many,
of this stuff existed.
Well, obviously not this stuff, but where so many girls were harming themselves, self-harming. And as terrible as self-harming is, at the very least, all you're left with are scars of knife marks. You're not actively removing your breasts.
Well, let's go on to the next one. This person says they couldn't give informed consent. I started transitioning when I was 16. They carry on. By the time I realized I was more depressed than ever, I had already had a mastectomy and 2 years on testosterone. I was thrust into adulthood broken. I went through the detransition process. I quit testosterone for over 5 years. And here at 27, I sleep 14 hours a day. My hair falls out and I can't stop gaining weight. I decided I had enough and went to get a full medical workup done. Sorry, I thought you wanted to interrupt that.
No,
it's okay. It's just my lab work revealed I had almost no female hormones. I will never have children. I have PCOS. I don't know what that is. Polycystic ovaries. Yeah, thanks, John. I have high cholesterol. I have cysts all over my ovaries. My PCP had to submit my results to a specialist because they were so unusually terrible. I will be on weekly injections, diabetes medication, and who knows what else for the rest of my life. And at this point, I have no idea if I will ever get back to feeling energetic, out of pain, and a little bit normal. When I signed those papers, I was not informed of any of this. I was a child allowed to destroy my body permanently under the assurance that I can always change my mind and that it was a beautiful, harmless process. The informed consent model is a lie because we are just guinea pigs to a medical experiment. My life is permanently afflicted. I was not informed. And they say they end this by saying, I only wish my experience could mean anything, but all it will ever be is internet harassment and an empty feeling. The medical community can't listen and the trans community won't.
It's just awful, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the whole point of this is that when you transition, you are, for the rest of your life, a patient.
Yes.
There's no moving back from it.
The next one is things not turning out as expected. This is a very short one. I have a body covered in thick hair now. This is a woman, I assume, who decided to take testosterone. My face, stomach, my arms, my legs, everywhere. Even when I shave my face, it's still noticeable. My voice is at the lowest pitch on voice analyzers. It's a man's voice. My chest is flat forever. My genitals are changed. I can't even bring myself to type out how, but we all know. I want to die, and then I think about everything. When I think about everything, it feels like there is no escape, just effed up. Let's go on to the next one. I miss my breasts so much. I sit in bed crying because I just miss my breasts so much. I got top surgery when I was 18. Now I'm 27. I mean,
legally an adult, legally you can make your own decisions, but when you're 18, you're still a stupid kid.
Yeah, legally an absolute fool at 18. I mean, Christ, like I just can't even imagine.
I look back at when I was 18 and cringe at some of the things that I did and said.
The clothes I was wearing, though, at least,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, like, and at least I can look back and go, well, that helped me to become the person I am right now, whereas this is not what this person has wanted in the long run.
Even if I get implants, they won't actually be mine. I want mine back. Not only were they mine, but they were great looking. I will never have them back. Never. I never thought that this would happen to me. I was always 1,000,000% sure I made the right decision. But in the past couple of years, I finally realized, and it's so effing hard to comprehend this and accept it. I'm going through a mourning period right now over my old body. I miss it so much. I look at girls nowadays, any girl at all, and I'm completely jealous. At least they have their natural body. I feel like an imposter, and I can't even claim that I'm actually a girl, even though I am. My voice is effed. I have no boobs. I'm constantly worried about passing as female, even though I am one. I feel so much regret, and it's eating me alive. It's just harrowing. Like, sorry that you've tuned into this, folks, but I just...
This is really important stuff to know.
Yeah. It's, you're not going to get these like just on CNN or like The Guardian or The Independent or something.
As far as I'm aware, the only people who are really amplifying these voices are a few people. Like Tucker Carlson has recently been doing some good work in amplifying these D-trans voices. And other than that, I can only really think of Blair White as somebody who's spoken to these people and told their stories. So
the next one is sexual development has been blocked by their trans identity. Not only physically, such as messing with my hormones when I was in the middle of puberty, stunting my health and sexual development, but also mentally stunting it, where I don't form a proper sexual identity or sense of sexual self, let alone in general, and it becomes twisted and dark. So they say, I was approaching sexuality at the age of 12, which is way too young, but whatever, as if I was a boy, and this is a female. Any sexual interaction I had through my entire teenage years to a year ago when I was 23 was on the basis that I was a male, and it meant that I had to have sex like a male, but I could never live up to the expectation, so it caused me immense grief. I never learned my body. Any sexual interaction I had would involve very little contact with my physical body, and I would project this image of masculinity that wasn't even me at all. It just makes me sad, and now my sex drive is absolutely gone. Was it ever truly there? I have zero desires, and any time I encounter sexuality, I'm confused. It makes me uncomfortable. My body feels so strange. It's what's been done to it hurts, and it's so insane to me that we encourage children to think that they're something they're not, and it totally messes with their head. I mean, I was convinced I was supposed to be a boy, and that was really my problem. Unbelievable. I feel robbed of my body and robbed of being able to have a normal developmental period, socially, psychologically, and sexually. I feel robbed of my organs. I was put on this path at such a young age. This messes with children more than doctors realize. I'm grieving deeply for myself and for all of those other young girls who don't see it yet.
And it sounds like they're going through a lawsuit at the moment, presumably against the clinic that did it. So whoever this is, good luck on your lawsuit, because I think that's one of the main ways that people will be able to expose this as well, is winning massive lawsuits against these places.
I don't see any other options. The next one is about lower surgery woes, which I mean, you can imagine how this is going to go. What are you supposed to do when you've gone the whole way? It's been 2 years since I realized and I regretted transition, and I still just feel lost. I had metoidioplasty, which with urethral lengthening and a vaginectomy too. I had my testicular implants removed, thank F, because they were so uncomfortable, but that's it. I feel desexed completely. I look down and I'm faced with the stupidest decision I ever made. I don't know if I can make peace with it, even if I've no choice. I'm so ashamed as well. A lot of what I call lower dysphoria was actually a direct result of me not taking proper care of myself, and I'll call it self-harm, I won't go into details. I was 19 when I started lower surgery. I was only 20 when I had the second, which removed everything. I hadn't even lived properly yet. I transitioned at 14 and locked myself up in my room. I went into surgery like it was nothing, and it's been downhill since. I want it undone, but I don't know if any sort of reconstruction would be possible or funded. I'm in the UK. It feels like I'm stuck in some horrible, hellish pit that I can't get out of. I want to scream and cry. I want someone to comfort me, but honestly, what does any of that do? I could talk about this forever and nothing will change, so why bother? Yeah, I'm still a woman, but there's only so much comfort to be found in those affirmations. I'm a human being, of course, so I care what I look like. And of course, I'm devastated that I'm flat-chested, balding, covered in hair with a distinct lack of genitals. What a goddamn awful position to be stuck in. Like, that is just the worst, isn't it?
It's just just horrible.
It's horrible. Awful. It's so horrible. I hate being in this body. I don't know what to do. Everything I wish I had is something I did have until I rid myself of it.
The fact that this has been allowed to happen, that it's got to this point within society where there are people who are saying, ignore this and just go along with the narrative, go along with what you're being told by the mainstream media and by the mainstream institutions.
It's so irresponsible.
Well, it's criminal.
It's criminal. It's so awful. This
is the great crime of our generation, as I see it.
This is going to age badly. The last one that I was going to go through is just one called Why Did Nobody Stop Me? Which is a great question, right? So they say it's effed up that I was given antipsychotics after HRT and not before. I had to see two therapists to get letters. Not one of them noticed that I was loudly, visibly traumatized and manic and falling apart. The doctors, this is a male to female, by the way. The doctors, my family, my friends, the therapist, not a single person took me aside and asked if I really was ready. I know who I was then, and I know that I would have taken that to heart. The moment I met someone who also had bipolar disorder and told them that I was manic and went straight to treatment, it was just 2 years after HRT, 2 years too late. I was coming out of an abusive relationship and unpacking a child sexual, something else, CSA.
Assault,
yeah,
issue.
Assault, yeah. And was on the tail end of a mixed episode and just dropped out of college. How the F was I allowed to irreversibly change every single aspect of my body and life? Why was I allowed to castrate myself? I should have been committed, not castrated. The only friends left in my life after everything fell apart were trans and naturally saw my pain around my identity and passed through their framework. I love them, but they should have given space for alternatives. They should have seen how effed I was. I was having hallucinations and delusions for F's sake. They knew about them and said nothing when I said I was a woman. Guess my genes are effed if they made a brain like this, so it's probably best that I'm kept out of the gene pool. It's my fault that I kept on their path after stabilizing, that I let the momentum ride. I'll own that, but I'm still so angry. Informed consent requires the person is able to consent, which should require confirmation of sanity. Everyone failed me in their efforts to save me, and I'll never recover from that damage. It's just the most harrowing stories on the subreddit. Like I said, don't go over there and give them any hassle or anything like that. Just be aware. Just be aware. It's just awful.
Yeah, and let's move on to the video comments. It's all right. Hopefully.
This has been consuming me all weekend, though. No, I've been reading these all weekend. It's like, God damn it.
I can understand why. I already know a lot of this stuff. Yeah. I know a lot of this stuff exists. And that's why, for the most part, after I know that it exists and I've got all of the arguments and information in my head, I try and avoid it for the most part, just because it is so
harrowing. It's abstract, isn't it, though? Like, you know, when you hear like the arguments, they're all abstract. When you hear the first person, like the genuine experiences of people who are literally trapped within... This is their life. There's no sort of second order considerations. They are trapped in this forever. And you think, God, that could have been you. That could have been me.
I know people personally who have detransitioned. But the thing is that those who have detransitioned, thankfully, never went through any major reconstructive surgeries or even much with the hormones. And their stories, in terms of how they were basically groomed into the ideology and told by everyone around them, the community, that it was the right thing to do, is just the same as all of these that I see here. And even then, these people that I know, most of them, well, all of them are girls who decided they wanted to be men, changed their minds. When they're wearing the binders, which they used to do, even something relatively small like that, you know, it's not cutting your breasts off, still can cause irreversible damage to the tissue within your breasts, which can cause major issues if you're trying to breastfeed in future, if you want kids and stuff. So just... avoid this stuff at all costs. Be aware, even if you know somebody who, you know, is toying with it, make sure they're aware of everything. Even if they decide they hate you for a little bit because you're telling them about it, they still will thank you. And when they aren't on one of these Reddit posts.
Yep.
Let's go ahead with the video comments.
The two hallmarks of narcissism are an absolute focus on your own self-image you put out and only caring about other people in terms of how they interact with your image. A narcissistic injury is one which shatters the illusion of the role your image plays in their life. So you've never heard of someone who murdered a trans person because in doing so, they acknowledge the person as being trans. But a comedian who laughs at the idea of them being trans sparks outrage because he's shattered their illusion.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Fair play.
G'day chaps, sorry about the quality of the video, but I wanted to show off some Warhammer I've been working on recently. This guy took me probably a couple of weeks to get done, but I'd say it was worth it in the end.
Very impressive.
Yeah, it looks good. From what little dabbling I've done in Warhammer painting, I'm not very good at it, so to me that looks amazing.
Yeah, that is very good. It is very good.
It is Pride Month when all the LGBTQE show up and have a good time. What is E? E is for the Emperor. So all you people who identify as Space Marines, show your Astartes pride worldwide. Those who love the unusual are called Xenophiles. So, let's call them Xenos for short.
Xenos, fear me!
Oh, thank God someone's put a smile on my face. thank you, Mechnomancer, for that.
I didn't realise we'd have so much 40k talk on this podcast.
Oh, look at it. Here we go again.
Go on. For us, the prodigal son. Daddy's golden boy. And his biggest disappointment, during the Great Crusade, he gets stabbed with a sword that gives him a vision. Modern 40k. And he says, no, I must stop my father. Stop him before he becomes a god in the eyes of the public. It's not right. It's not what he wants.
I think we all know where this is going, so let's just skip to the end.
Long and short of it is, the Emperor pulls Lord Beerus and erases Horus's very soul. Now, he ain't coming back. And if he does, it's the final nail in 40k's coffin.
Fair play. 40k lore sounds awesome.
It is awesome. I just didn't think there'd be so much on the podcast, sorry.
Tony D and Little Joan with another Legend of the Pines. The Cape May Fish Market of Cape May, New Jersey, originally built as a hotel in the 1800s, the American Hotel. It was turned into stores and this seafood restaurant, which serves things like oysters, Rockefeller. The security camera captured this ghostly image of a ghost, and most mysteriously, things move without anybody touching them. Proof, Callum.
I tell you, Callum's off this week, but I'm definitely in his face.
We'll have to show him that one. Yeah. I mean, it was a ghostly image of a ghost,
yeah.
Obviously.
And Callum, a thing fell off a shelf.
Yeah, this is no other explanation.
Yeah, this is as good a proof as I would ever need.
I'm sure Bigfoot's in there somewhere as well.
Yeah, say something about that.
To meet my good friend, Manny Quinn. Hey, Manny, what was it that you said you did for work?
Yeah, I worked for the UN on the schedule as a drag queen
you
event.
Son of a bitch!
Just try and be careful.
There are some aspects of American culture I really like.
Yeah.
Just being able to shoot watermelons in the desert.
Luckier than we are.
Mm.
On the subject of Empire of the Dust, has Carl or Callum ever seen the documentary from the 60s, Audio Africa? It's a documentary covering the decolonization of Africa in that time period and shows the conflicts, ecological catastrophes, and the human rights disasters that occurred during that time. The assigned pictures show a suppression of the brutal Simba Rebellion, and yes, there are on-screen executions in this documentary, so be advised.
Jesus.
No, I haven't. Sorry?
No, I haven't heard of this.
Neither have I. It sounds like it'd be a good watch. Well, not good, relative here.
Yeah.
But yeah, mercenaries are given one day to do some shopping in a liberated Simba-controlled village. Most of the population was already dead, so most of the stuff was up for grabs. I respect the man with the hats. And man knows his priorities, apparently.
I guess so.
Yeah, no, I'll have to track that down. Find that. Sounds interesting, at the very least.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I've been playing Warhammer since I was about 7 here, and I figured I'd get my nephew into it. So I got him the Orc Combat Patrol, along with a codex. It isn't here at the moment. I got myself the Space Wolves, each of us a wet palette. Got some old Warhammer pieces that need to be redone there. There's a story behind this one. Salt on Black Reach set there. All the paints and primers that we need, varnish, tools, a basing, old Imperial Bastion. So yeah, thank you.
That is actually an awesome collection, I'm not going to lie.
That's fantastic. Although it's just reinforcing, like, to me, and this is not meant as an insult, Warhammer 40K seems to me to just be Barbie for right-wing men.
Yes.
And this is a good thing.
Yes.
We all need something.
G'day, guys. Giving a shout-out to one of your viewers and her band, Catherine and the Overbites. They're an up-and-coming band centered in Darwin in the Northern Territory. They love your show, and they've got some pretty bass stuff in their repertoire, like this. You got it too.
I can't. That's
that's
awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, go check them out. But I can't help but think about your comment. Like, it's Barbie for right wing men. It's like, yeah, but Barbie itself is deeply patriarchal.
Oh yeah,
right. It's exclusive and it epitomizes gender roles, and it is.
It's also based on what you would call traditional or at least old fashioned views on beauty.
Yeah, exactly. It's based on sort of like old fashioned views of beauty. It's deeply exclusive. It's only for girls, and it's completely traditional because she does girly things. Like, you know, Barbie, we should be supporters of Barbie at this point.
I am. If I have a daughter, I'm absolutely getting her some of the old school Barbies. None of this modern stuff where it's like, oh, plus size Barbie. No. What kind of example is that setting for my daughter? Oh, don't worry. You can get fat and have no consequences. Yeah. No, this is rubbish. Barbie and all that sort of stuff started to go wrong when all of a sudden the feminists did start screeching about it. And the little girls all seem much happier with it back in the day, as far as I can tell. But also, yes, I'm always happy to support artists. So if you're interested, go check out Catherine and the Overbites.
Hey, I'm From The Rock. A teaching moment about our lovely little sport. The TT course is 37¾ miles long, well over 200 corners, and takes upwards of 500 volunteer marshals just to manage it, as well as professional and technical officers. Including Mark Perslow, we've now had 261 rider deaths, 17 more deaths including race officials and bystanders. More than 46,000 people visited the island for the racing in 2019. Considering the island's population is only 64,000, that's a lot.
That's awesome. I didn't know any of that stuff.
Was that the Isle of Wight?
Isle of Man.
Isle of Man. Oh yeah, my dad always goes to the Isle of Man. He loves it. He thinks it's fantastic. So, Dad, please don't get caught as one of those bystanders, for the love of God.
Yeah.
G'day. As an Australian who knows a bit about firearms and the Australian policies behind them, I'm going to break a myth. And that is that 70% of the semi-automatics were confiscated by the government. That is only partially true. Before 1996, firearm registration wasn't mandatory, but it was encouraged. So the 70% number that the government likes to tout around is actually of the registered firearms. They have no clue what is out there when it comes to unregistered.
Good. Ooh, very interesting. Yeah, good. I think the government not knowing who's armed and who isn't keeps them on their toes, keeps them in the line.
Well, you'd think so, but look at Australia now.
Yeah, you would hope so, but still. I mean, maybe they would have been worse.
And if you look on the bottom left where it says 5 out of 10, that's actually a new round count in the future we have with our new generation of PMAGs, where if you start firing rounds off, you should start dropping. So your eyes never need to leave the target to know where you need to aim and whatever your ammo count is. But hopefully the round counter will be coming out sometime next year, and the actual fire control system should be available end of this year.
Well, you guys have been doing mag.
I mean, how is it not a real-life HUD?
Yeah, does it? Do you have a health bar?
Well, I mean,
If I hide behind waist-high walls, does my health regenerate?
But, I mean, it tells you everything about the gun without having to look away, so, I mean, that's what a HUD is.
Also, why do they keep teasing us?
Yeah, I know. We can't have any of this
showing
stuff.
Us guns, really cool high-tech gear. This is sadly useless information.
This is why we have to keep talking about Warhammer, okay?
It's all we've got over here.
So Thursday's episode kind of reminded me of how track photography is basically as natural as you can get. In racing, everything's moving so fast that trying to get that perfect shot is mainly just luck. And you can see right here, I've gotten a few really good ones. These are all unedited. These are all my photos. And it's something that I've had as a sort of a passion for a while. Also, if you want to check out more, go to War Turtle Photography on Facebook. You'll find me there.
Dude, don't sound apologetic for that. They were some amazing photos.
Yeah, some of those were awesome. I do love that NASCAR is just, you know, turn left simulator until all of a sudden you're flying through the air. But it just looks awesome.
He's totally right, though, isn't he? You can't stage any of that.
I mean, most good photographs, as far as I can tell, because my fiance's photographer sometimes, is basically just luck of the draw. A lot of the time you kind of have to wait around taking photos constantly, and then you look back and see if you've got any good ones, because you can't really, unless you're in a really controlled studio environment, you can't manufacture a good photo. It just happens.
Yeah, I saw a thing about some guy had taken like the perfect photo of a kingfisher diving down towards the surface of water, where its beak was literally just touching it, and it's he'd taken something like 200,000 photos to get that one photo of just the king, because of course, see, you can't stage it, so he's just like, you know, hundreds of thousands of times trying to get it.
Yeah, a lot of the times their sports cameras, according to John, have very high FPS, like 60 FPS. Yeah, so you can just take hundreds of photos within a few seconds, but it is still ridiculous. You have to be very patient.
Oh, I bet.
Very, very patient.
We are now at the permanent exhibition of Moose God. Maybe somebody have noticed this necklace that I'm always wearing. This is the Odin mask, based on this stone, which has been carved in 1000 AD and was found rather close to where I live, only 2 hours drive.
That's really cool.
That is really cool. Speaking of like Odin and stuff like this, I think Josh and I might be thinking of doing something on the Northmen soon.
I haven't seen it, actually.
You should. It's fantastic. But the contrast there between like the Odin and stuff like that, and then you see all the crosses, does remind me there's a line in it, because obviously it doesn't shy away from all the slavery that happened back then.
Yeah.
And they've got Christian slaves, and they're all just wandering about going like, oh, who are these guys? Oh, don't pay any attention to them. Their god is some dead guy strapped to a bit of wood.
The screen you are watching has a finite area. Can you draw a line within it that has infinite length and yet never overlaps itself? Yes, you can. Forming on screen is a Koch curve. Every iteration adds one-third to the length of the previous line and, since a line has no width, it can repeat infinitely. The length grows geometrically. Obviously, the curve has more than just one dimension, but it doesn't quite have two dimensions. In fact, its dimension is fractional, or fractal, and its value is 1.26.
That's really cool.
It is. I just don't know what I'm supposed to take from it.
I think it's just knowledge for knowledge's sake.
Right, okay.
Quick view of the Grand Tetons, and yes, this is June in Wyoming. Part of Wyoming.
Looking forward to that global warming there, I guess. we're being promised a lot of changes and it's not happening.
Man, it'll be flames soon enough, I swear. Yeah. You need to read the IPCC, then you'll know.
Right.
Tony D and Little Joan with an announcement. The Piney's Book 9, The Witch Hunter Piney, is now available at Amazon, ebook, trade paperback, Kindle Unlimited. It's free. It's all about witch hunters. And I tie it into Matthew Hopkins, who was a famous witch hunter from the UK in the 1600s during your Civil War. I also tie it into the Malleus Maleficarum, otherwise known as the Hammer of Witches, a book in the 1400s that tells you how to deal with witches.
Let's do a book club on that.
Yeah, sounds cool.
Maybe 5 minutes. The driveway is already flooded. Look at the water pouring off of my grandpa's roof. This is insane rain that we're getting. My mom's towels are wet. Okay, so the water is absolutely gushing out of the spout. It is shooting off the end of the gutter,
because
the gutter is overflowing.
Mad.
It's like Saturday.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't nearly that bad.
It wasn't nearly that bad, but it's still, I was there was all the Jubilee celebrations going on down the road from my parents where I was staying, and all of a sudden at midnight, it just starts pouring down, and I just hear all the celebrations get ruined, sadly.
Mm.
Anyway, let's move on to the comments.
Charlie says, congratulations on the Bloodstock booking, Harry.
Oh,
well done.
Yeah, thank you. I wasn't expecting anybody to actually notice that. My band's thankfully managed to win Metal to the Masses, kind of, and get on the Jaeger stage at Bloodstock. So if you're at Bloodstock later this year, come check us out.
Well done. So I was reloading my thing so I get more comments.
No, that's fair. I mean, do you want me to go through a few on my segment? Nice. Based Ape says, serious question. If Boris is to be removed as PM, who would be good to replace them? We are a little short on options, are we not? I think the only suggestion that Carl and John and Callum seem to have seems to be Kemi Badenocker.
Yeah, but even then, that's not going to happen.
I don't know any good replacements for him that would be in the running.
I mean, there are just no good options in this country. We don't have a Ron DeSantis.
No, sadly we don't. We have supposed libertarians like Steve Baker, but he doesn't seem to really care about the cultural aspects of the whole situation. So,
Steve, I'm a libertarian in a socialist party Baker. Yeah.
Hey, man.
No respect.
It's hard. Okay, nowadays. Ultra XYNZ brackets E. The most important question is, if the Bojo is finally replaced, will they have learned from their mistakes? No.
No. No. It will get worse, and they will become a more Blairite party.
more than they already are. Well, it'll just go back to being like Cameron.
Yeah, well, Cameron was a total devotee of Blaise.
Exactly. Blaise. So it won't get better. They won't have learned from the mistakes. Or will it just be the same clown, different mask? Yes.
Yeah.
It's important to remember that there needs to be a clean sweep of much of the civil service, Patel's portfolio being the epitome of the malignancy that's taken root.
Yeah, I know. I mean, Priti Patel should have just been clearing out the Home Office just after, Phil Putnam or whatever his name is.
Yeah,
it's I've been bullied out of my job. It's like, yeah, and the rest of you are going to be bullied too.
There's so many different layers of bureaucracy within the UK government that just need to be gone. Omar Awad, it's baffling how the public can vote against leftist policy time and time again, but after Conservatives get in office, they constantly spend their time trying to appease the squeaky wheels that lost the vote instead of the majority that put them there. Nobody voted for the status quo party. Those votes were a repudiation of Labour and their woke agendas. Yet the best we can hope for is delayed leftism.
That's exactly the problem. Why? And it's because I think that they're in the Westminster bubble, they're surrounded by these people all day and all night, and this becomes their reality.
Well, it becomes their reality, but they all, because of that, they all subscribe to the same ideology. They all subscribe to the same sort of, people call it neo-Marxist, but I think it's closer to like the weird radical anti-fascist ideology that we have right now. So you can't expect them to do any different when they're all going towards the same goals. And it's just how quick we get there. Paul Newbar.
Just a quick thing there. Calling Boris a conservative Corbyn is right. Whoever gets into power, it always seems to further build back better New World Order insanity. So I wonder if we don't have our own uni party in the UK outside of parliamentary theatrics. Yeah, we do. We absolutely do have a uni party. And it's not even necessarily this being puppeteered either. It's just the Conservatives are so empty of any thought on what should be done. The Labour Party's command everything they do.
Yeah, it's mindless ideology without really understanding where it's not from even or what ideology. It's trying to lead to.
I would be happy if they had an ideology of some sort, because at least it would be predictable. At least they'd want something, but they don't seem to want anything.
Yeah. Paul Newbar says, is it time for the monarchy to reclaim authority over the executive from the parliament?
But even how would that help?
Within the monarchy, it's like, you've got William. Yeah. Would he be good? But he's at the World Economic Forum as well. He's all for their agenda, so he wouldn't help. Andrew? Charles? No, none of these. They're all useless. Harry? Do you want Harry and Meghan in charge? Do you want them to come back and reclaim the throne?
They're either useless or nonces.
Yeah.
So it's like...
Great. So this is what we've got as a country right now.
I just don't understand how it would help. That's the thing.
Yeah. Callum Dayton says, I'm pretty disillusioned with democracy and voting. Same.
It's only because it keeps going wrong, the thing is, if the Conservatives weren't being given the opportunity to show everyone, look, we could do something, right? If it was like, oh, they kept losing the vote, you'd be like, okay, well, that's democracy. You know, that would be understandable, regrettable, but at least understandable.
Well that's the thing. They keep winning the vote on the basis of we'll do what the public wants, and then they turn around and go, not so sure about that anymore. But, I mean, it's what... From the populist illusion, one of the things that he points out is that I think it was like the 1930s, 1940s, Edward Bernays was advising all of the elites to say like, well, you know, you could do what the public wants, but if you do what the public wants, they're not going to want what the enlightened progressivism that we're all actually aiming for, aren't we? So just say that you'll do it and ignore it. And that's, as far as I can tell, what the elites are doing right now.
How is it not what the Conservatives are doing?
Yeah. Anonymi says Boris will be kicked out for someone far worse, who will be more than eager to bring forth the boog eating and lockdowns. That is the worry, isn't it? Do you want to go on to your comments?
Baron von Warhawk says, I think the main reason why the drag queens are dancing for children is their desire to break social norms and tear down repressed sexual fetishes. They are so determined to break these rules that they never stop to consider that these norms exist for a reason, and certain sexual desires deserve and need to be repressed. Yeah, we're talking about the noncing here. They are either ignorant of the damages they cause or indifferent to their evil actions. And that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, look, I don't mind if you want to be a drag queen. I just don't care.
Just keep it to adult spaces.
Exactly.
There you
Why
go.
Can't it just be for adults?
And one of my friends is a drag queen, and I'm... Fingers crossed, I bloody hope he's not going to schools and do it, because if he is, I'm very annoyed at you.
But why, what's, like, when he goes up, it's like, you know, why are you dancing for children? It's like, yeah, why?
Why
children?
That's the reason they don't have an answer. They just insult him and then try and run away.
Yeah, just call his mother a prostitute. Anyway, Zen-chan says, it's not going to lick itself. That actually made me throw up in my mouth a little when I first read it. Those teachers need to be fired. They weren't teachers, unfortunately. Well, no, fortunately, I should say.
I thought it was a school trip, wasn't it?
That particular one was a gay club. No, there wasn't.
The Gay Straight Alliance. Yeah. But
that was something different. That was the second one.
Oh, wait, so was that just parents just casually taking their kids
to a gay club? So that they can be danced to.
I don't think those people are fit to be parents.
And when Ping says, screw defund the police, defund the groomer schools. Yeah, tell me about it. Northants Knight says, so a very niche form of adult entertainment is now sexual preference and or gender, and the children are being subjected to it. Another gate to hell opens up. Exactly. This is really niche, right? That's a really great point. This is really niche. Children are not, like, clamoring for this. You know, they want to go and play football.
Yeah.
Or play with Barbies.
Yeah,
exactly. Or whatever it is, you know.
Exactly. Have you ever played
big Barbie sporting podcast now?
have you ever played Oblivion?
Yeah,
you've played Oblivion, right?
Yeah.
Someone needs to do a meme where the Oblivion gates open up and it's just drag queens out.
Yeah, they do. But it's just mad, isn't it? It's like this, and the fact that they couldn't discuss it in any way of them being highly sexualized shows that this is not something that should be around children.
Of course not.
At all, in any way, shape, or form.
And the dancing itself is provocative. How anybody looked at that and went, this is completely normal and fine for children. It just speaks to the speaks volumes to the condition of their mind.
I know, I can't take it. Longchance says, honestly, I feel so bad for gay people, trans people, even drag queens who just want to do what they want with an intolerant society and keep getting lumped in with these noncy degenerates who can't stay away from other people's children and make the pit at the end of the slippery slope that started in the 90s go deeper and deeper. Yeah, unfortunately... These are the people that everyone's looking at when they think, oh, you know, gay people or drag performers or whatever it is. Like, there are lots of them just like, look, nothing for children.
Yeah,
what's wrong with you?
Just want to get on with it. I'm beginning to suspect maybe this is all just a psyop to actually increase homophobia, transphobia in a legitimate sense so that they actually have something to point at and say, look, we are oppressed after all. It's like, yeah, you did it to yourselves, though.
Maybe.
Great.
But I don't care what consenting adults do, but this is not about consenting adults, and that's the problem. Callum says, as much as I don't like talking about the stuff on one hand, on the other, I feel like this needs to be dragged kicking and screaming into the public's eye and force them to confront and see this stuff happening. Because as much as people are aware of this, the level of naivete by many does distress me. Because the level of the stuff that's going on is being allowed to continue. I know, it's mad, isn't it? General Haiping says, since there's a surgeon that's planning to implant a womb inside of a man, if that's successful, I can see an epidemic of women selling their wombs along ideological lines just be more potentially added to this epidemic of madness.
Oh, you're right. You're right on.
I've been preparing another document for the second hour cyberpunk dystopia stream that I'm going to do. I'll do it when Callum gets back because I like his reactions to it all. But I've got that in the second one. It's going to be great.
And I swear most of your premium content is just a way to draw me and Callum into despair gradually.
There is an element of sadism to it.
Of schadenfreude, yeah.
No, just open sadism. Benjamin says, the child drag nonsense is happening here in Finland too, sadly. Some drag guy with a stage name ended up with FVCK. That his stage name was, it ended with FVCK. Had slimed his way into getting to go on tour and performing as part of a sex ed show in high schools around Finland. When challenged, the organizers cite experts, saying it's all okay.
Screw the experts. Throw away the experts.
I literally don't care what an expert has to say on anything at all. Brandon says, Milo was right when he said future people will look back at how we dealt with the trans issue in the same way how we look at how 19th century people used electric shock therapy to deal with schizophrenics. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. This is not going to age well. Dave says, these transitioning kids don't discover these ideas holistically. It's always from groomers. We need to protect them from these groomers so they don't make stupid decisions and make a life-altering surgery at 18. Oh, it's mad.
Yeah, just to add something interesting onto that, when we were doing the premium on D-Trans, there was that one that was very, very interesting to me, which was somebody who pointed out explicitly, like, I only developed this because I got into weirder and weirder porn. This was a fetish for me.
Yeah.
It's not just groomers, it's the sort of like a degenerate porn that these people are watching as well, sadly.
Yeah. Sophie says, maybe this is really my female side speaking, but Jesus Christ, I so badly want to find these people and embrace them. I feel like I can feel their pain through their words. I just want to sit with them and hold them tight and at least ease the pain a little bit. God damn, guys, you're messing me up. Sorry, Sophie. Right. And the thing is, that's why I wanted to do that segment, because I'd read a bunch of these. And Like, you really can feel the pain through the words.
I don't think you need to just be a woman to hear this and just go, God, I don't want to give this person a reassuring hug, do you? Like, because I listen to this and I go, God, if I could just make it better for you somehow.
Mm. But I just feel bad for them, frankly. Mm. You know, and Lord Nerevar says, we do a good job of calling out this BS, but it's easy to get sucked in and champion people like Detransition as if they're some sort of heroes or martyrs. They aren't. No, they're victims. That's the problem.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And you are exactly right to point that out. They're not, because the one concern is, oh, conservatives are using this in the culture war. It's like, yeah, there are conservatives doing that. And I don't even think that's an unjustified thing to do, but that's not what these people are. These people are victims of trans ideology, you know? M1 Ping says, the doctors who wrote the informed consent forms belong in the wall at the wall with the maps. Tess Verko says, these D-trans stories are truly gut-wrenching. Is this the future these people want? It's not the future they were promised anyway, is it? Hello World says, all this surgery and ongoing medication seems like a massive con by Big Pharma to enslave the population forever. And as you were saying, you become a patient forever.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, you know, I'll have the surgery and then 5 years' time, I'll just carry on as if nothing had happened.
Your body's been messed up in so many unnatural ways. You're going to need it just so that you're able to function properly.
He says, I see a lot of similarities with depression medication where millions of people are given pills so easily. The scary thing is we are unsure of the long-term effects of these chemicals and could cause permanent damage to our brains. The more things said about Big Pharma being evil for the world, the better. Yeah.
And on that note...
On that very depressing note, yeah, Jesus.
Yeah, on that depressing note, I think that's all we've got time for. Thank you very, very much for tuning in. We'll see you again tomorrow. Goodbye.